EFL, never a dull moment. Windows are slamming, Bolton are buying, Bury are trying and Southend are crying. This week we'll reflect on the latest in the wide world of the English Football League, make grossly unfair assessments of Championship teams based on 6 games worth of evidence, tell you how you should feel about Salford City, and get up to date with who's gone where for what after a last-minute deadline day trolley dash that would have made Dale Winton, RIP, proud. This is the Totally Football League Show. Welcome one and all to this place of worship for all things Football League. I'm Matt Davis Adams, and you should thank your lucky stars that I'm here because I have a vision that nobody else has. Alongside me today, two ex-pros who would never dream of having a social media spat about whether they earn their 120 quid a week or if Muddy Knees Media is a big enough club for them. First up, a man who told the Scottish Sun that working at Chelsea TV was his big break into the world of football media. You're welcome. This week, photos emerged of him playing the role of David Gandy in a Swindon Town programme from a decade ago. We will link said pics in the description of this pod and on our socials because it needs to be seen to be believed. Sam Parkin, how are you doing and what were you thinking?
Jay from Five, that's exactly what I was thinking and I thought I nailed it.
What happened to your hand?
The gloves.
You didn't have a hand.
Look at the pictures closer. Yeah, it's there's been some photoshopping there of one of your hands. But you're right to point out that I can't really have a go at you because I'm particularly scruffy.
I'll take it all on board, Stella McCartney and Giorgio Armani.
Sergio Giorgini, if anything. Alongside Sam, a dark horse. You know him as a tactical analyst, radio presenter and pundit. But did you also know he had a minor hit in 2018 with his song Soca You, quotation marks, 2018 Soca, brackets, Barbados. We can hear some now. From the time that you're walking, make me high to the ceiling, captivated by your mood. That's the problem with having a really common name, isn't it, Adrian?
I like the length you've gone to. Well played.
Joe Crilly is illy, so it's posh odds all the way today. We're going to start off with Joe's team, though. Bolton, good news for them. The Bury business had us all doomy and gloomy last week. Back in those days, we were thinking we better get cracking on the Bolton obit too. But lo and behold, Wanderers' salvation arrived. Yep, in typical fashion, just hours after we dropped last week's show, Football Ventures Brackets Whites Limited completed its protracted takeover of the club. Since then, Keith Hill has been appointed manager with fellow Boltonian David Flitcroft as his sidekick. Bolton signed 9 new players on deadline day. They drew 1-1 with Bradford, losing on pens in the EFL Trophy in front of more than 9,000 at the University of Bolton Stadium on Tuesday. All in all, a decent week for them. Sam, Keith Hill, thoughts on that? I thought Kevin Nolan was a stick-on to get that job.
Yeah, I did as well. Surprised that they didn't go for Nolan. But yeah, Keith Hill's a manager that I've always enjoyed watching his teams. I enjoy what he's got to say on the game as well. I've just always quite liked him from afar. He's local, isn't he? He's from Bolton, I believe. Not that the fans desperately needed someone to, I suppose, really understand the football club, because they had that with him, Phil Parkinson. But I think it still helps to have a local guy. And he knows the level. He'll know all the out-of-contract players, I would say, in the Northwest. He'll know the young players that they could realistically prize to Bolton. So I'm pleased he's got another opportunity. I know David Flitcroft a little bit, and those two have worked wonderfully well together before at Rochdale, not so well at Barnsley. But hopefully they can do well for Bolton.
They're a bit of a good cop, bad cop team, those two.
Possibly, yeah. I've never worked for either of them, but no, I think they obviously go back a long way. They obviously see the game the same way and have had relevant success at Rochdale. So, no, I think some people just, you know, have their team, don't they, in place, and those two seem to have a good dynamic between them.
In terms of the signings, Adrian, they made 9 of them, as we say. Stoke winger Thibaut Verlinden, Liam Bridcut from the 2XCCs, along with Daryl Murphy, Joe Bunny, the Northampton left-back, right-back from Ipswich, Josh Emmanuel, centre-half Jake Wright from Sheffield United, Ali Crawford's come in from Doncaster. They've also brought in Chris O'Grady and Will Buckley. It's essentially an entirely new team, but there's a nice mix there of kind of, it feels like a lot of those players have got something to prove, whether they be young or old.
Yeah, his first act as manager has been a positive one, I think. I don't think you'll catch too many Bolton fans desperately unhappy about those acquisitions. Mixture of youth and experience, like you say, players with points to prove. I've always liked Liam Bridcut. Hasn't played a lot in recent seasons, but he's got a bit of fight about him, a bit of character. He'll add steel. Daryl Murphy was first choice not that long ago at Nottingham Forest, so that's a decent coup for them. So no, I think that the rebuild is positive. And what I also like is the fact that they've been sensible. They've signed these players up on real short-term deals, haven't they, a lot of them? I think the loans are until January. They'll reassess. If they dead and buried in terms of relegation. I guess they'll call it a day and give the kids another go. So no, they're approaching it step by step. But in terms of the first job on his to-do list, Keith Hill, I think he's done it well.
Joe Crilly, as I say, not with us today, but because he's on brand, he has sent us a statement in. I'll try and do a Joe impression, but he's quite a difficult guy to impersonate, so bear with me. Sadly, I think that relegation is fully... And you know what? I'm not going to do a Joe impression because I can't do it. Sadly, I think that relegation is fully on the cards, but I wouldn't be a football fan without that 1% of belief that we'll claw our way back up to one place above the drop. The aim, however, is not to stay up or go down, but to galvanise the community to get behind the team again. And everything is in place to do that. We have an owner who was born in Bolton and a manager and assistant from the town. And through adversity, we have to really get behind our team, regardless of our position in the football pyramid. Up the Whites. Up the Whites, indeed. Right, we're going to talk about transfers next.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show in association with William Hill.
So the transfer window for Leagues 1 and 2 was quietly and safely pulled back into the lock position at 5pm on Monday. Here are some of the moves that caught my eye and about which I'd like some thoughts from my panel of experts. Cameron Borthwick-Jackson, Man United to Tranmere. Clarky, I feel like this is a move that's kind of got to work for him. He's been kicking about on loan for a long time now.
It does have to work for Cameron. He reminds me a little bit of myself, really, because he got into the Manchester United team. I think he played 10 times, a similar amount to me, and he did all right. He impressed quite a few people, but then he fell off a cliff, which is something I can kind of empathise with. And since then, clearly his confidence has been affected by the rejection, I guess, at Manchester United by various managers since Van Gaal. And then by the managers he worked with on loan. Wolves didn't play him. Leeds didn't play him. It wasn't impressive. Last year, he was part of a struggling Scunthorpe side that went down. So he needs this to work, doesn't he? Otherwise, you do feel like his career as a professional might be in jeopardy. He might end up dropping into non-league. But I wish him the best of luck. And he's certainly a player with pedigree.
Might be able to say the same, Sam, about Jason Cummings, who's gone from Forest to Shrewsbury. He's a very streaky kind of striker. He'll go through periods where he gets loads of goals, but obviously there's this off the field stuff that seems to follow him around, which has made him a little bit toxic maybe, but Shrewsbury need goals and he can get them.
Yeah, and he started brilliantly at Peterborough last season and clearly knows where the goal is. Got a lovely left foot. What I will say is he was at Peterborough, who arguably will be in the mix this season. Luton cantered to the title last season, so he's gone to a club, with all respect to Shrewsbury, but a club lower down the League One table, if you like, with different aims, I would suggest. So he will play every week, would be my take on that. They've got Okunibiri and Morrison, but you know, it's been a little bit of a struggle for goals at the start of the season. I like Okunibiri, and I've banged his drum on this show, but there's obviously something that the managers that have him see day to day, whether it's, you know, exactly the type of forward that Sam Ricketts is looking for. He's a finisher, Okunibiri, but maybe Jason Cummings can give them a bit more of a rounded performance. So, yeah, I think, like Owen Doyle's done, going to Swindon playing for a manager that knows him under in Richie Wellens, sometimes as a striker you just need that fresh challenge and the goals can start rolling.
An EFL player who's been one of my favourites for well over a decade is Craig McHale-Smith. I love his floppy hair. I love his determination, the fact that he clearly loves football. He's gone from Wickham to Stevenage. He's 35 and he just seems to just want to play for as long as possible, and that's something that I think we can all get on board.
Yeah, and he's out of non-league as well, wasn't he, Craig McHale-Smith? So 35 now, I wouldn't anticipate he's going to play every minute or even start games, but they were their first two league goals of the season at the weekend for Stevenage, so they clearly need some help in that department. If he can be an influence with the younger players and the strikers, then it could be a good sign. And on his style of play, I think when you give so much in terms of closing people down and covering every blade of grass, I think your impact as a goal scorer diminishes as you get older. And I think that's clearly been the case when you look at his record. But he's still going, he'll still give 100% and he'll get the odd goal.
Yeah, what I like about this signing is that work rate that he gives sets a good tone for the team, a good example for others. But it also will free up Guthrie or Newton, who are sort of swapping places at the moment as the spearhead. It'll give them maybe...
Not doing much spearheading, are they?
No, they're not. But they won't have to work as hard. It might take the load off of them to some degree and allow them to concentrate on scoring goals. Jason Cowley, of course, the kid they got from non-league, hasn't really clicked for him yet. But together as a four, lots of firepower there now.
Jake Hastie from Rangers to Rotherham sounds like a rush job to me. Arvin Appiah Forest to Almeria, 8 million quid, fuming face emoji from the person in this chair. Is that, I mean, actually the general perception from Forest supporters on this seems to be, well, that's very good money. And, you know, look what happened to Ollie Burke after he went.
This is a consequence of signing too many average players. Yeah. It is, you've, Nottingham Forest, two-time European champions, have wasted so much money on bilge, basically, that they need to balance the books. And they've sold the most promising player they've got. Which is, okay, we haven't seen a lot of him at Forest, but everybody raves about him. He's probably a future star for them. But because they're spending an extortionate amount on quite a lot of average players, something had to give. And that's a real shame, I think, for Nottingham Forest. But, and maybe for him as well, because I'm sure that he would like to have stuck around and broken through.
Good on him, Sam, though, for he had lots and lots of suitors. And it's good to see. You know, we're seeing a lot of English players go abroad, but they tend to be older squad players from the Premier League. It's nice to see a young lad think, hey, I'm going to test myself in another country, which is an entirely different challenge in lots of ways.
100%. And I've seen a lot of quotes about this young man this morning. He seems like a really good young professional, but more importantly, a really good young man as well. Very intelligent young boy. So to go over there and have the experience of playing in another league, I think you have to credit that. I was desperate to go overseas in my career. No, in Europe, I came close to going to the MLS on a couple of occasions, and I would have absolutely loved it.
Did you ever get offers to go abroad, Clarkie, or were you ever tempted to do so?
Yeah, there was a point. A club in Singapore actually offered me the chance to go there, which I thought was really random at the time, and it was just too big a leap for me. But no, because I had a baby at one point, and it kind of took that off the table for me when things weren't going so well at Southend. So that was when I decided to sort of take the plunge, come out of the professional game, be a semi-pro at Stevenage, and to start the career that I'm now on as a football journalist. So that was my choice. If I had been offered the chance, and if my lifestyle had suited it, I would 100% done it. And I love the fact that the current trend for young, talented British players is that, no, we're not afraid to go abroad. And I back them all the way on it.
Right, transfer chat done until January then, thank the Lord. Let's now have a discussion about games of football that have taken place and the consequences thereof, starting with the Championship. Right, Championship then, where the headlines include Leeds beaten by a bunch of Swans. Steve Cooper's Swansea, as suggested, might happen on this podcast last week, secured a 1-0 victory at Elland Road. Their first win there in 70 years. They sit atop the Championship going into the international break with 16 points. West Brom and Charlton remain unbeaten after six matches. We didn't see that coming from Charlton at the start of the season. Meanwhile, Huddersfield still have no manager, still have just the solitary point. And Danny Cowley has said thanks, but no thanks to the prospect of taking charge. And Stoke City prop up the table with 1 point and a goal difference of -9. Yeesh. With there being no matches in the Championship this weekend, this is the perfect opportunity for us to do a review so far. We are 7.66% of the way through the season, after all. And we're going to take a look at some of the teams, not all. First off, some of the surprise packages. Swansea, very much top of that bill, Adrian. We spoke about them in depth last week, but you can only lavish more praise on them after their result of the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I did fancy them to do something at Elland Road, not necessarily to win, but to at least take a point. I thought that they could handle Leeds United. And the reason being is that they can handle the ball when they have it. I think that they're happy to accept that they'll have less of it than some opponents like Leeds, for example. But the structure of their side is really good under Steve Cooper. They're all really comfortable in the jobs that they do. And when they do get the ball, they don't waste it. They're quite sensible in the way that they move through the lines. I think they've got some good footballers at Swansea. So, no, I said it last week. I think that they might be the new Norwich in terms of an unexpected team to stick around at the top. And obviously, I'm not going to change my mind on the back of that performance. So yeah, well done to them. The only issue I'd have is that they've got a lot of younger players. And with younger players, you get inconsistency. So I wouldn't expect them to stay in top spot for the duration of the campaign. But I think a good season lies ahead.
Sam, Charlton's a club you know very well, with your mate Johnny Jackson being Lee Bowyer's number two. Other than Lyle Taylor penalties, Conor Gallagher and 12 games unbeaten, what can you tell us about them? I mean, presumably, this was beyond their wildest dreams in terms of a start to the season.
Well, yes, you would think so, but the last few days and probably the last 7 days of the window, they did some fantastic business. So I think they play a system which they know very well. We look at Luton's Diamond last season being outstanding. Well, I think there's arguments that Charlton probably play it equally as well, if not better, considering they beat them towards the tail end of last season. Lovely balancing in the midfield. Obviously, Cullen is a huge player for them, a huge asset having him back at the club in the Championship. Three centre halves for two places in Saar, Pearce and Lockyer. So Bowyer has the luxury of choosing, dependent on what type of opposition they're going to face, if he needs a ball playing one or an aggressive one. And top end of the pitch, they've got Lyle Taylor just with confidence rushing through his veins. And Lecco probably had his best game at the weekend at Reading, and off the mark now as well. So yes, they've maybe been a little bit fortunate to win against Brentford, but you saw them probably unfortunate to only draw against Forest. So they're probably 2 points better off where they should be.
Yeah, surprises in terms of disappointing surprises, as you said, lying. Derby, beaten playoff finalists, only won 1 of 6. That was on opening day. No shots on target against Brentford. I mean, might be Philip Cock out before too long.
Philip Cock. They were poor at Brentford, weren't they? You look at the goals, you look at the chances that Brentford created. They're all from gifts, with Derby losing possession in really bad areas. So that, I think, is a worrying sign. They're obviously weaker than they were last year. The quality of the players that left the building and the quality of the ones that come in didn't match up, unfortunately. Add to that Philip Cock, who's getting to know a new league and a new dressing room. And it's not going well. It is slightly alarming, I think, for Derby fans, because they would not have expected this. There are very few signs, I'd suggest, that they're about to go on a more positive run. They need to work out what to do up front. I think that's the key with Marriott and Waghorn. Find the right formula and go from there. But there's a lot of work to do, particularly without the ball.
So they were walloped by Brentford. Speaking of whom, Ian Westbrook writes, politely, morning. Once Brentford's new signings are bedded in properly, do you think we have a good go for the playoffs? The evidence of the performance against Derby suggests it may be possible. Sam, you are a fan of the way Brentford play, and in particular, Ollie Watkins.
Yeah, I was just going to say that when Adrian was speaking, I mean, the one team you don't want to give the ball away to in dangerous areas, especially away from home at Griffin Park, is Brentford, because they are phenomenal at home on their day. Yes, I think they could be talking playoffs now. It's still a bit of a work in progress in terms of the new players settling in. I like Jensen for one in the centre of the pitch. And Mbeumo obviously got his first goal at the weekend. He's been called up for France under 21s as well. So I think with Benrahma and potentially Mbeumo in the team, it's a different proposition having Ollie Watkins down the middle. I saw them with Canos and Marcondes last week at Charlton. I don't think Marcondes has got a goal for God knows how long. And for me, Canos is brilliant, his effort, but he played right wing back at the weekend and was much better. So I think he could be better suited to be playing a little bit more withdrawn in terms of what he can give. But Watkins, yes, loads of debate about, is he a central striker? Is he a wide player? I had a little look. Apologies if I'm maybe one or two games out, but 20 and 72 when he's been deployed as a wide forward. So about 27% there, and 6 in 14. If you take the brace into account at the weekend, which is over 42%. So I think it's important who he has either side of him. And I think it makes a difference, a big difference, Brentford, if you're playing at Griffin Park, to what he can probably produce as a number nine away from home. But I think the numbers show you that if he has good quality around him, there's no reason why he can't fill that void. But I'd still like another striker, and they have one in the building now in the Greek chat.
Yeah, I think that their away form will get better the more confident they become as a unit. They'll be able to look after the ball on their travels as well as they do at home and create damage. So I think that will come. When I first saw Watkins playing the flesh, I thought he's a striker in the making. He did a bit of both in the game that I saw at Bristol City. So and they've not let in many goals, have they, this season? I'm just looking at what they've done. They lost 1-0 to Charlton and Leeds. No shame in that, particularly away from home. Shock defeat at home to Birmingham. But then clean sheets in beating Borough, Derby. Drew with Hull 1-1. So they're solid. They've got good forwards, as Sam's been outlining. A new look midfield at the weekend, which worked well. So there's a lot to like. I think they can make the playoffs.
Right, just a brief line on each of the relegated teams. Fulham, Sam, relegated but coping, Mitrovic Key.
Yeah, I was there on Friday for Cardiff, and as you anticipate going to the game, had all of the ball. I've seen them being criticised because it's a bit sideways at times, but Cardiff are quite interesting in their setup that they go man for man quite often. They did on Friday in various areas of the pitch. So they seem to allow Fulham to kind of saunter forward, the two centre-halves exchanging passes. And then the pass into Mitrovic was on all evening. And it was a pass which Cardiff almost allowed into Mitrovic's feet. The problem for Fulham is they don't have runners in behind Mitrovic. They don't have pace. Cavaliero wants to come to feet. Knockhart wants to come to feet. If they can add that to their game in the next few weeks as this squad is getting more used to playing together, then yes, I still put Fulham in my top two, top three.
Cardiff were opposing them on Friday night, Clarkie. Just a bit meh. Warnock going out with a whimper.
Bit disappointing, really, their start to the season. You look at their form on the road, hammered at Reading, goalless at Blackburn. They need to be much more solid on the road than that. Obviously, the home form will be strong. You'd expect that. But yeah, no, I'm slightly underwhelmed by Cardiff. I did tip them to be in my top two, but based on what I've seen so far, they look more like possible playoff material.
Huddersfield, we'll leave you alone to cope on your own. It's not going well. New managers with fairly mixed starts. Birmingham, who was supposed to be in crisis, they seem to be doing all right. They had Jude Bellingham, an actual child, scoring, sort of, for them at the weekend. Middlesbrough, Sam, one win in six. Tough start for Jonathan Woodgate. Is he going to be given the season because he is a Middlesbrough guy? It does buy you a little bit of extra time, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think there were signs in the opening weeks of the season that the football was good and it was relatively exciting and they were making chances. I think the longer it goes on when they're not getting kind of back-to-back victories or a convincing home win, there's going to be question marks. But no, a good point against Bristol City on the back of a point they didn't deserve against Millwall in the previous home game. So listen, they need some more contributors, I think, in terms of the goals, because they're so reliant on Osamba Longa, who again notched at the weekend to get them that point at Ashton Gate. So I think patience was probably going to be the key there. And I would imagine that the supporters will be feeling relatively okay about things.
I think they can match last season's finishing position, which obviously isn't what they want, but they will do it playing a better brand of football. I think Paddy McNair's playing really well, and Wing looks a good technician to me. So I think there are more positives, actually, than negatives at Borough.
Sheffield Wednesday, harsh words from Lee Bullen about his team of individuals at the weekend. Danny Cowley, Joe suggested a couple of weeks ago, might be about to become Danny Owley. was it you who made that dreadful?
Guilty.
Yeah, okay. Is that the job that he's been waiting for? Because it's a difficult one to judge, isn't it? You want to wait for the right one, but you don't want the moment to pass you by.
Yeah, and you're just thinking of Paul Hurst and you're thinking of Nathan Jones straight away. That must be a consideration for any manager who is getting linked with Championship jobs. I read yesterday that the families, Danny Cowley and Nicky Cowley's families, have relocated to Lincoln, and I think grandparents as well of the children.
Not
so
that far to Sheffield.
It's not that far to Sheffield, but it's just how much of this project is still left for them to conquer, if you like, you know. And I think the dream is to get them into the Championship at Lincoln City and make them established. They've ticked every box. They've won.
Even if they do take Lincoln to the Championship, would they get a better offer than Sheffield Wednesday? I just think there's a ceiling on the type of club that would employ them.
No, it's a good point. But whether the problems at Sheffield Wednesday are too great for them to walk into that gig at the moment, that's only they can make that decision. I would suggest that given what Steve Bruce did at the back end of last season, there's a lot of that mess has been tidied to a degree. And also, my other main point on it is I don't think it's a fan base that would demand a really exciting new brand of football, if you like. I know they've tried to go down that route maybe with Luhukay to no success at all. I just think, yes, it's an amazing club, Sheffield Wednesday, a huge club. But I just think if the Cowleys wanted to go in there and be slightly direct or pragmatic to begin with, they'd be given an opportunity to do so.
Yeah, sorry, Lincoln fans. I think they should take it if it's on offer.
All right, time will tell. I mean, it might have happened by the time you listen to this podcast. That's the way it usually works.
Let's get some odds then, Abby. Promotion and relegation-wise in the Championship?
Yeah, so Leeds are the favourites. They are odds on to be promoted. They are 2-5. And then it's Fulham who are evens and West Brom who are 2-1. For your two-time European champions, Nottingham Forest, if you want to put some money on them, they are 7-1. And Derby, incidentally, who are very low down in the table, 8-1.
Put a tick in the bookmark Championship chat, but keep that pencil sharp as we head to League One. Want to know where you can watch EFL highlights this season? You can watch them on Quest and Quest OD. Quest is the home of EFL highlights on free TV, and they're here for all your Championship, League One and League Two requirements. Where can you find Quest? Freeview Channel 12, Freesat 167, Sky 144, Virgin 217, or just go online and watch at questod.co.uk. Do that and you could be watching the weekend's football an hour and a half before Match of the Day gets started. And you can't watch the two-time European champions Nottingham Forest on Match of the Day, can you? Not yet anyway, nor in fact for the last 20 years. Anyway, the EFL, you love it, we love it, so watch it on Quest. Freeview Channel 12, Freesat 167, Sky 144, Virgin 217, or just go online to questod.co.uk. League One then, where the headlines include Bury MP James North making his case to the EFL to have Bury FC reinstated into League Two for the 2020-21 season. Ipswich are top and humming, in a good sense, not odorous, more prosperous. The Tractor Boys unbeaten this season and uploading James Norwood gifts all over the gaff. Triple H getting the Norwood treatment this week. I know you were asking. Let's hope Norwood doesn't start blocking the development of younger wrestlers by refusing to job to them in high-profile matches. Wait, come back. No more wrestling chat, I promise. And for the first time in actual years, figuratively, Sunderland don't even have a 1-1 during their match as they lost 3-0 to Posh. This just days after knocking Burnley out of the League Cup. Sunderland till I get by? Bury then. Gone but not forgotten. Actually, maybe not gone at all. James North, the MP, has launched his bid, backed by the Mayor of Manchester, Andy Burnham, to get Bury back in the EFL next season by reading an appeal to them. Statement time.
We recognise the mismanagement that has put Bury in this situation, so we understand the EFL needs to take action, but feel the punishment is unduly harsh, and what we've developed today is a proposal to try and persuade other clubs that Bury should remain a Football League club by entering League Two for next season.
In fact, the EFL are up for discussing Bury's re-entry. They agreed it's appropriate to discuss the matter with member clubs, but added there's no precedent for a club to enter the EFL directly through an application for admission or readmission following withdrawal of membership. That red-haired dude has tweeted us, at the Totally Show the handle to do so. He asked, with the news that the EFL may reinstate Bury to League Two from next season, do you feel this is a fair conclusion? Clarky, my inclination would be no, it's not, unfortunately.
It sets a dangerous precedent for other clubs to potentially not do things properly, knowing that they might have a safety net that they won't drop out of the league. Personally, I would put that to one side here, because this is a historic football club, and if they're not liquidated, if they still are ready to go on under new ownership with sustainable plan in place, then it does feel daft that on the back of a deadline that was set because of this season, which I get, that they would have to start down at, you know, down level 8 or level 9 in the pyramid. I think if there's a way to for this to happen, let's explore it, and I wouldn't be against it. But what I think needs to happen is a decision needs to be made in the next month or two, because those at the wrong end of League 2 need to know, is there one down or is there two down at the end of the season? It'd be incredibly harsh if they think at the moment it's one down and it's suddenly in March they say, no, Bury's coming back, so it's now two down. I don't want that situation to happen.
What do you reckon, Sam? From the point of view of a League Two club this season, or a National League club looking to come up, they're probably not going to be that happy about it.
No, I'm kind of in agreement with Adrian, to be honest. I mean, it just makes me think, why on earth wasn't this looked at prior to the season kicking off? And I can't remember who said it, but the opportunity for these clubs maybe to be suspended for this campaign and get their houses in order surely would have been the right way to go, and then they could have obviously had these conversations in a year's time and been ready to go for the 2020-21 season. So I don't want to see a club have to go down and essentially play in the 12th tier or whatever it would be, which is doesn't sit well with me. It's a club I've played a great deal throughout my own professional career. And it could very well be any one of these clubs. That's such a huge part of the community. So, yeah, I want to see them given every opportunity of having the chance to come back in next year.
I wanted to briefly touch on Sunderland, not in action this weekend, their game with Burton postponed because of international call-ups, but mention the defeat they had at Peterborough, which was a bit of a thrashing, coming off the back of that win against Burnley. It makes me wonder, what are Sunderland? Like, are they any good? And Jack Ross, is he any good as a manager? I can't make my mind up.
They're the hardest team to critique across the whole EFL, in my opinion, because they have got the best squad. They should be getting promoted out of that league. There's no doubt about that. They have maybe the best creative spark in McGeady. I thought the business they did in the summer was great. I really like Willis. I like Dobson. And you both know that I've put my house on McNulty being the top scorer in the division. He's got none so far. He's not even playing up front. He's playing in behind. What is Jack Ross doing? No. Listen, we can only see what they churn out. You know, on the match days, we're not there day to day. Is he putting the handbrake on some of these forward players to a degree and being too overly cautious? That seems to be the argument. And listen, it's one result after five straight victories. So I think, having watched the game as well, I said they need to just take a little breath this week, the Sunderland supporters, because there was nothing in that game. It was a horrid 45 minutes. It was terrible, lit up by Madison's free kick. And there was a huge moment, either at 1-0 or 2-0, when Beavers made a brilliant saving challenge at McNulty as he looked to be scoring for Sunderland. So fine margins, I felt, at the weekend. In the end, descended into carnage. They lost their head. Well beaten, but I think we still need to give them time, and I still believe they'll go up.
There's a pressure on them, Adrian, isn't there, that is unique to a club in League One, and that the expectation is so tremendous on them, particularly that this is their second go at trying to get
out. Yeah, but it's not a bunch of kids. I think they're quite an experienced group of players that have had success in their careers so far. They've got a manager that's had success north of the border. So no, I don't think there's any excuse for them not to go up this season, really. It's probably the wrong time. It's probably still premature to ask if Jack Ross is any good or not. I like the way that they had such a losing habit before. You've got to remember what he inherited, and he made them tough to beat. Mm. He's now laid a platform. What I think he needs to do is just now allow the star men to just express themselves, be a bit more adventurous in their approach, and I think they might cut loose and climb the table rapidly. I'm still backing them for top two.
All right, well, let's have a look ahead to some of the weekend's game. The fixture list has been affected by international call-ups. We're going to have a look at a couple of the 12:30 kick-offs. Sam, MK Dons versus Wimbledon. Apparently, they don't get on very well, these two.
No, they don't. It should be tasty, hence why it's an early kick-off. There's not generally a great deal of goals between the two. I think there's just the five goals in the four league games they've played against each other. So I expect it to be a tight affair. My concern for AFC Wimbledon is there's not much of a threat coming from the middle of the pitch. And yes, they go quite direct. And I like Appiah and I like Piggott, who obviously saved them last season. But are they masters at backing in and winning headers? I would suggest maybe not. I think both of them are decent players and good finishers. But yeah, I think that's probably the only way they can really go, Wimbledon, get balls in from the wide areas. Guinness Walker, the best named signing of the summer, has obviously had a good start and got his first goal. But there's not a great deal of goals coming from elsewhere. So I'm a bit concerned about them, although Nightingale, back from injury, first clean sheet of the season against Wickham the other day. That's big for them. And MK Dons, I went a little bit in the same kind of vein as we were talking about Sunderland. I think a little bit more time at the higher tier is necessary to give Paul Tisdale, just as he gets used to that division again, integrates a few players. I think Boateng's been successful in midfield so far, missing a bit of a threat at the top end of the pitch, having lost Anike, Wheeler, for example, two players that did very well tail end of last season and conceding far too many goals.
Wimbledon, by the way, did sign three players on deadline day, including to join a pint and a packet of crisps up front, Marcus Fors from Brentford, thus creating the cringeworthy headline, "May the Fors be with you." I mean, really, that only works if David Mayne's the manager, doesn't it? Then it's gold, but otherwise...
That's an interesting signing, though, a good signing, but I suppose what I was just saying about the football, Fors is, he's a number nine, but he's not a statuesque chap, so... Are they going to have to mix it up and play a slightly different way? I'm not sure they're capable of that.
Yeah, well, it might be a force to be reckoned with. We'll see. Adrian, Doncaster against Rotherham, a ding-dong derby. Meeting of two teams who've only played four matches rather than the expected six. You say their positions in the league are false, therefore. Doncaster unbeaten, two wins, two draws. How's Darren Moore done so far?
I think he's done better than I anticipated, actually. I think I tipped them to be struggling for relegation this season, purely based on the quality of the players that headed out of the exit door. They lost so much quality that I feared for them, but the signs are good. I think the two centre-backs, they've got a new partnership at the back. Cameron John is doing really well, a loanee from Wolves. Tom Anderson's next to him. So no, I think that they've got a good base there. Ben Sheaf is a player that I know who came in from Arsenal. I think he's injured at the moment, but he's a defensive midfielder. So I think he's someone that can help them as well. So no, they're doing okay. I did read reports that Victor Anachebe is training with them. Free agent. That would be a good coup, wouldn't it? And that would be the sort of guy that might step in and replace Marquis. I'm not saying he scored anywhere near as many goals as Marquis did, but that's their issue, isn't it? They've lost the talisman, and in his place, they've got a couple of exciting talents. Mm. Is it Keziah Sterling, Niall Innes? They might be brilliant, but they might be hit and miss as well. They're not going to guarantee you the goals that Marquis did. So that's their issue. I think it'd be a good game. I really do. Rotherham, bit disappointing. They're not scoring as many goals as anticipated, conceded from three set piece goals as well, which is a bit unlike them. So when I look at this game, I'm leaning towards Rovers, I have to say.
This game is at the Keep Moat, but Rotherham, for their home games, are running a random act of kindness scheme. Last week they handed out free pies to people who came in early. Off the top of your head, any kind of random act of kindness a football club should introduce? Can I suggest sensible ticket pricing and not playing music after goals go in?
I'd endorse that. Yeah, it's very annoying, isn't it? So yeah, no, all day long. Look, a free pint, that's good. Get the punters in early, encourage them to maybe spend a bit of money at the bar ahead of kickoff. Good shout.
Odds wise for League One, Abby, how about the big one between MK Dons and Wimbledon? Who's the favourites for that?
The Don Derby. MK are odds on to win 19-20. The draw is 13-5, and for Wimbledon to win, it is 27-10.
And up in Yorkshire, Doncaster versus Rotherham.
In Yorkshire, for Doncaster to win, you can get 19-10. For the draw, it's 5-2. And for Rotherham to win, 27-20.
We've been talking about Sunderland and their promotion prospects. What do our friends at William Hill make of those?
Well, they are actually favourites for promotion, 5-4, which maybe a bit of an eyebrow raiser there. But Ipswich, who currently top the table, are 75.
OK, and how about Sam's mate, Mark McNulty, to be top scorer?
That is a solid 40-1.
Wow.
On that.
Worth a pound if you want to lose a pound. So that's League One. Remember, there's going to be a lot more attention paid to you this weekend, League One, so dress nice and mind your manners. League Two, we come in.
Hi, I'm Emma.
And I'm Jeffers.
And we host the Series Linked podcast, all about the telly that's both on and in demand. We're able to tell you what you should be watching and what might be worth a swerve.
Previous guests include Simon Cowell, Susanna Reid and Ricky Gervais.
We speak to some of the biggest names in telly. Plus, we're compiling a definitive list of the box sets to watch before you die.
Search for Series Linked on your preferred podcast app.
The podcast for TV fans by TV fans.
League Two, we hear. In the news this week, Exeter top as Scunthorpe continued to flop. Stevenage score twice in 4 minutes, still didn't win though. And Salford City, MK Dons Mark II or Club of the People? Now that's where we're going to start. I've been making my way through the latest Class of 92 series on Sky. It covers Salford's promotion into the EFL last season. The club and its famous owners have copped a fair bit of stick with accusations they've bought their way into the Football League. It got me thinking though, shouldn't we be praising them? You only need to look at Bury to see the worst of football ownership. Sam, at least these guys, A, go to games, and B, seem to genuinely care about the development of the club.
Yeah, anyone who's watched any of the documentary episodes would
They're
see.
They're good, aren't they, those shows, I think?
It's been brilliantly put together. I've really enjoyed it, and it was very topsy-turvy last season. I thought it was really interesting the way that Graham Alexander adapted the playing style when they hit a bit of a rut last season and were losing a number of games, dropping points, and he got a load of athletes in. I think it was around transfer deadline, and change the formation and win a bit direct to get them out of the division. So there's been some wonderful insight from it. But in terms of the owners, I think they're, you know, very, very intelligent and at the forefront of that as well in terms of the ticket pricing. Gary Neville was speaking about that recently. I think it's £10 in, £5 for kids. So, and it can be as close to £20 at that level. So yeah, I think they're running it in the correct manner. And the early season form is anything to go by. It looks like them and Leyton Orient could have quite comfortable seasons.
Yeah, they did court controversy by changing the colour of the kit, and as I meant, they spent a lot of money. But it's time for a new feature. New feature, Klaxon. We got Klaxons, haven't we, Abby? Yeah. This one's called Adrian Asks. We're not wedded to that, though. Clarkie's conversation still very much in the mix, titularly.
Adrian's call, like Adrian's wall.
We'll put that on the maybe pile for now.
So bad.
It's not bad on the spot, is it?
That's awful.
So you were at the Peninsula Stadium last night.
That's Graham... genius. Adrian's cool. I can't do more for you. That's unbelievable.
But he's not ringing somebody, is he? Nah. He's not having a say on something like it. If it was an opinion piece, then you're great. But
it's not bad.
Okay, it's not bad. Clarkie's Conversations is the one for me, but we'll see. We'll ask the people, see what they think.
Yeah, that's better. Clarkie's Conversations.
So Graham Alexander was good enough to speak to you pre-match. We can hear that now.
Have you changed your ambitions, aims for the season since the start? I know that the bookies had you right up there.
Yeah.
I thought that was a big ask, personally. Yeah. Not because you're not a good team, no. Just because it's a big leap, isn't it?
Yeah.
What is the target?
Well, listen, we want to be successful, and success for this club is trying to get to the next level, but there's no determination to do it at the first point, as in, like, it has to happen. But we're a club that's in a hurry, really. Yeah. So,
is it going to be a steady progress? Because when I looked at the business, obviously the Richie Tao signing was a standout. I thought, he's a really good player for that level. But you didn't go crazy,
no,
did you? In terms of the transfer market, is it slowly, or is it a hurry? As you said,
well, no. We want to be successful as all clubs do, as soon as possible. But I felt we had good players already in the squad, and I didn't want to disrupt that too much. We tried to add quality. And we did do that, and obviously Richie was one from a higher level that's come to join the sort of crusade. But you have to give players the opportunity. I feel, you know what I mean. I think, and you don't know who's going to come to the fore. But we've seen, you know, six, seven games now. Who's doing well? Who's thriving? Who's struggling a little bit? Can we help them improve? But we've brought in players just to make sure that improvement happens. We definitely we know we have to improve as a team.
Yeah.
If we didn't, we'd be at the top. We're not, so we have to improve where we can.
Fair enough. I've got to ask you about the board level aspect as well. Just interested from your point of view as a manager, you've got all these great players, these famous faces sat behind you in the stand. Is that something you enjoy, or does it add a little bit of pressure with those eyes on you?
To be honest, I don't think about it when the game's going on.
No,
I only think about my team and players, but I think it works both ways, because if you're doing the job well and you're getting praise from these guys, then that's great. You know what I mean? But I see it as a working relationship where they've employed me to do a job for them. They've put faith in me, and I want to be paid that faith. But listen, they are different owners from the usual owners you would find at most football clubs. But they've got great knowledge of the game, and what they've achieved in the game is an inspiration for himself and the other players in the squad.
Yeah, well, Gary's a tactical analyst. Goals, he's been a gaffer. So they must chime in and say occasionally, you thought about doing this?
Honestly, they don't. I mean, listen, I have regular contact with Gary about football aspects, about the players and tactics and stuff like that. But the rest of the guys are just there to support us. From the background, really, and just I think they probably just enjoy coming to the games and just watching their team play, rather than get involved in the nitty gritty. You know, that's the thing. And I think but Gary's a bit more hands-on. He wants to be involved in the running of the club and everything. And me as a manager, I need somebody like that to bounce off anyway.
You were the team in the National League that everyone seemed to want to hate. I guess it was the green-eyed monster, a bit of jealousy. Have you noticed a difference in the EFL? Has it been a bit more welcoming, or are you still that team?
No, I think people want a bit. Listen, football's competitive, so people want to win games anyway. But I thought it was probably a little bit more last season.
Yeah,
I do believe that. It was a little bit more intensive. I think, you know, if we did lose a game, it was a big celebration from the opposite. But listen, it's part of the game, and I think there's different stories behind all clubs and teams. I think obviously the connection of our owners and their connection with Man United and what they did. I think sometimes people think they're actually playing against Man United, you know, and it's not, you know. Yeah. So, but listen, it's part of the game, and I think it always adds an edge to the game. That's what I do find. There's no mundane atmospheres or anything where we go to it. There's always an edge to it, which I think actually helps the atmosphere and helps our team.
Some good stuff there, Adrian. How did you find him personally? Very interesting on his relationship with the owners and Genev in particular.
Yeah, absolutely. Really nice guy, very friendly, amiable, and I loved his enthusiasm. Yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it, when he was talking about, I asked him whether there was added pressure, the fact that there's so much football talent and experience looking at him, you know, monitoring his choices in games. He says he doesn't think about it, but when he gets praised by them, it means that bit more. And that was really interesting. And I can definitely see why he thought that. Also, it was nice to hear that the welcome from EFL clubs has been not quite as vociferous as it was in the National League. Because my impression there was it's a really friendly club. It's a beautiful little ground, completely unrecognisable from when they started. It's not big. It is a little, it's a box-shaped ground, but perfectly practical. And it was a nice place to go and watch football. So, and the people were lovely. The football is okay as well. It's a mixture of athletic force and nice passing as well. So no, I think onwards and upwards for Salford. Very bright future. And in Graham Alexander, they've got a really smart boss.
Well, to read the whole interview with Graham Alexander, head over to our website, thetotallyfootballshow.com, where you can also find our throwback feature on Norwich 1, Colchester 7, as Nick Miller speaks to wrestling's Grant Holt. There's also an interview with former Sunderland star Lee Catamol after he's moved to VVV Venlo, and thoughts on Frank Lampard's managerial prowess. That's all on thetotallyfootballshow.com. In terms of red hot League 2 action on Saturday, Sam, you've taken a look for us at Grimsby versus Crewe. It's fourth against third. The Grimsby fact of the week, James Hansen, involved in 7 goals in 6 league games for the Mariners, 5 goals, 2 assists, as many as in his previous 47 league games during his spells with Sheffield United, Bury and Wimbledon. We've spoken a little bit about Grimsby in recent weeks. What about Crewe? What stood out for you about them start the season?
Well, most league wins, League Two wins in 2019. So they're in exceptional form. Got a nice balance, as you would expect, of academy graduates doing the business. Charlie Kirk is the main one in that. 7 goals and 5 assists since the start of the year as well. So he is heavily involved in everything they do. Technically, very gifted player off either side, can create goals and score goals, as we saw at the weekend. And he's been playing wide on the left-hand side in a 4-3-3. And I think previously 4-4-2 was the shape. And he's really enjoyed having that extra attacking responsibility playing high. So him and Lowry, another really good player, scored a fantastic goal. 5'6", really diminutive little player. So we spoke about Cardiff v Fulham being a little bit beauty v the beast. Not to do Grimsby too much of a disservice, but possibly something along the similar lines this weekend. Although I think Grimsby have clearly got the option to go into Hansen, but they've got some excellent players in very good form if they want to play a little bit more. Hessenthaler's had a fantastic start to the season in midfield, and he's been flanked at the moment, Hansen, by Green and Ogbo, who both had really good starts to the season. So they're going to get the majority of their goals from set pieces. I think that's been, not the majority, but they're going to get a lot of goals from set pieces. They're the highest scorers in the division in that regard. But I think this is a Grimsby team that's going to do a lot better than they did previously under Michael Jolly.
Do we have a curious stat, Claxon Abbey?
No. you've got a humdinger of a stat.
Well, it's not a humdinger, but it's fourth v third, right? Two informed sides. Six games played. In five of the six games each, they've let in the first goal. Yeah, they're absolutely flying. So they've come back from 1-0 deficits over and over and over again. Crewe, three wins from those five deficits. Grimsby, two wins and two draws from being 1-0 down. So they've got a little bit of spunk about them as well.
Can't say that, surely.
I mean, you can. It's just that we're childish. Deep breath. Bradford against Northampton then, Adrian. Two teams who've had pretty disappointing starts with managers who maybe should be doing a bit better.
I think so, yeah. I picked this one out because it's a game that both of them really kind of need to be looking to win. For Bradford, I just feel... First of all, do you know what happened with Owen Doyle? Why they let him go? Because I don't understand why they would allow such a good goal scorer to leave the building.
I don't, but he never looked like he was happy, never looked like he was in form, Bradford. So I think it was one that they probably just had to hold their hands up because he hadn't been doing the business.
Yeah, you just wonder if it would come back to bite them if something happens to Vaughan or Donaldson. They've got the best front too, obviously. But yeah, I just feel that with Bradford, haven't really found their identity yet this season. The change of formations every single week. I think it was three at the back last time out in the game at Crewe. That Sam's just been talking about. So, yeah, disappointing start, I guess, for them. As for Northampton, then the most interesting aspect here is the fact that Keith Curl is going against what he's always done, which is be a bit of a, you know, bomb it into the box and be strong, bigger, stronger, tougher than everyone else. He says that Northampton fans demand a lovely brand of football, slick, fast, attack-minded football, and that's what he's doing. I loved the two goals at the weekend because I like to see great wing play and Sam Hoskins put in two fantastic crosses for Andy Williams to score. So that's a combination I want to look out for in the weeks and months to come. If Hoskins and Williams can strike up that understanding regularly, Northampton could climb the league playing a more entertaining brand of football than we've seen in the past.
League Two odds, Abby. What are we saying for the Grimsby versus Crewe game?
The Grimsby versus Crewe game, the home win for Grimsby, that is 7-4. The draw is 12-5 and away it's 6-4.
And how about Northampton's visit to Bradford?
For Bradford to win, it's 11-10. For the draw, 12-5 again. And the away win for Northampton is 12-5 as well.
And what about Salford to get promoted?
Salford to get promoted, they're the fifth favourites at 5-2.
Now, plans for the weekend. Sammy, are you international breaking it up or are you going to be somewhere around the EFL?
I'm going to watch the mighty Swindon Town at the mighty Leighton Orient.
So that's going to be a clash of two of your former clubs?
Two of my former clubs. One spell slightly more successful than the other. But as I've said on many occasions, I've apologised to Martin Ling profusely about my lack of goals in the red and white of Orient.
And while you're being all self-effacing, it's worth pointing out, because this is the coolest thing about anybody that I'm friends with, you are in the Swindon Town Hall of Fame, and that is a very great thing.
Got a lovely tie for my years of service. Yeah, you get a nice tie, which was given to me on the pitch. I was with my family to mark the occasion, and Don Rogers and John Trollope gave me my tie. I think combined they probably played about 2,000 games for Swindon, and Don Rogers probably the best ever player to grace the county ground.
Clarkie, you'll be on the wireless Saturday, Sunday?
I will be, yeah. That's it for me. Yeah, tiring midweek, obviously, up to Salford and back last night. So, yeah, I'm going to step aside this weekend. And then, of course, next week, it's the big one for me, off to Peppa Pig World.
Oh, nice. Diego Costa and Willian used to absolutely love Peppa Pig World, and that was Diego Costa's favourite thing about England, apparently. Couldn't make it up.
Each to their own.
So another pod has reached its natural conclusion. Had some laughs, killed some time. What more do you want from us? Caroline's back next week. Do join her then. I'll be returning in a fortnight. Until then, take care of yourselves and each other.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.